On this episode of C-Level, I'm speaking with Ryan Sowers, President and CMO of Sowers Consulting Strategies.
So Ryan, so thank you so much for coming out. You got several books out, you've got a consulting firm, you do a lot of speaking. I'm really excited about today's episode because we get to talk about sales and marketing and you know how that plays in the workplace. But I'm really big on people's journey. So tell me yours, like how did you get started? How'd you get into all this? Where are you from?
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Chris. Yeah. I appreciate it. I'm actually Atlanta native. Cool. So in today's world, that's the outlier, I guess. But yeah, you know, I always had an interest in sales, communications, human behavior, marketing. And even when I was an undergraduate, I kind of parlayed a communications, public relations, marketing courses to get to kind of what I thought I would do. And yeah, these things you name have come together because I have a passion for, you know, improving human performance and all the things I named. And so my story has been year by year, step by step, person by person, relationship by relationship. And it's kind of led me to where I am now, which is it's crazy, it's busy, but it's a good busy. It's fun. You know, I stay have my hands on a lot of things, but I love it. Absolutely love it.
Where in Atlanta are you from?
Originally, I was in like the Decatur-ish area. Yeah. And then I lived in another part of DeKalb County. Mm-hmm. I now have raised up three daughters, one in college at Georgia Tech, one a junior who's going to play soccer in college, and then my baby, I call her, she's 12, mm-hmm. and she's in middle school. My wife is like 23 years, but we are now in Gwinnett. Okay. So, one time, long term, I'm going to get to Florida and live by the water. That's my
goal.
Yeah,
there you go.
But I promised the family we would be here for a while, but that's where we are.
That's cool. So, what was it about? Was it something early on that you knew that you wanted to, you know, learn more about sales and learn about marketing? Did this start like before school, while in school, out of school?
You know, that's a great question, Chris. I remember my dad telling me on the trip to college, he would show me like, we'd go through a fast food restaurant. And he said, somebody sold that concrete. Somebody sold that building. Somebody sold this real estate space. Somebody sold this sign. And then I kind of halfway listened. But I realized even when, you know, like in high school, I did the yearbook sales. And I did it mainly, for anybody listening when they're all tuned in later, I did it because you could get out of three class periods and go off campus.
Right?
But I
got a way to get out.
And they were like, they told me back then, I remember the first, and I had a lot of success, but the first reason, like, why did you join the yearbook staff? And I'm like, because I'll get 90 minutes, I can leave campus. And they're like, That's your reason? I'm like, oh, and to help, you know. So I saw immediately, no matter what I got involved with, I got passionate about it, and I could, in a genuine manner, build a relationship and find fits between people. So, education was certainly part of it, but it became just, I would just even say this, early on in my career when people say, your best traits in sales, I took that almost like, well, I can do a lot of things besides sales. And now, in my mid-40s, I look at it as every human is going, we need a strong salesperson on our staff. And I mean a person that can really open doors and build relationships. Right. So now I'm like, very thankful. I didn't understand completely the background compliment.
Yeah. So, and I find that a lot early on, like salespeople kind of figure that out, like,
right.
There's something here. Like, actually, it comes easy. Like, for me, like, I actually started out, I'm an entrepreneur as well. So, like, I started out really young at like 7 years old.
Wow.
I was trying to sell my finger paints on the street corners. Okay. Yeah. So, like, it's funny because, like, I did horrible in school. Like, I was not a student.
No.
I was more hands on. But when I went back and I told my mother, I said, listen, it is not normal for a 7 year old to go out and sell finger paints on the street corner. So, that's early on. I knew I was kind of really good at this sales game, and that's, you know, I'm finding that some people, you know, have noticed that, you know, some of those traits early on, and it just kind of led into a career in sales.
Yeah, I mean, I watched my middle daughter. She's probably the closest to what I, you know, she's 17, and I've coached her since she was two, but she has, yeah, she doesn't like school either. I mean, I didn't like school. Yeah. So, you know, when I told you, if we talk about, I'm working on a doctorate, I didn't like school. Mm-hmm. I was bored out of my mind through high school, and even in college, I enjoyed the social part of it.
Yeah.
So I always enjoyed connecting academic concepts, but how does it mean in the real world? Mm-hmm. And that's my passion. You know, that's great to talk about theories and whatever. Now, in the academic world, they get a little upset with me when I say that, It really, everyone wants to know how can this play out, and so now I get asked often about being an entrepreneur,
yep.
Right? And you're an entrepreneur, and I think if you don't have that sales type feel, which is what you were doing with the paint, trying to convince people to look at your stuff, it's something inside you that drives you to want to do something that other people can't do, or like they don't, they're scared to even think to try.
Right.
And I think it's fascinating studying and being around entrepreneurs.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things that actually I used to struggle with when I was younger is, I used to think everybody was just like me and thought just like me. And I'm like, this is the vision. Why can't you see the vision? You know, I see it complete, but you can't see it complete. And it was a struggle because, you know, the way a lot of entrepreneurs and visionaries think is they already see the completed project,
right,
whatever it is, whether it's a company, whether it's an app, whatever it is, right? But sometimes they have a difficult time expressing that to other people and how to get there, you know? So I think it's important for entrepreneurs, you know, to have a vision, that's great, but figure out a strategy to get there,
right,
because ideas don't make you money.
No, and I'll give you an example. So I'm certified in some of these personality types like you and I were discussing, and one is Myers-Briggs. It's one of the most widely used in the world. But if you just take one component of this, intuitive people are very big picture, gut feel, sixth sense.
Yeah.
So and you and I could say, we're going to do this, and then we're going to go there, and somehow we end up on the beach in Florida, and we say that in like six sentences. And then you got a second group of people, which is about half of society, called sensing. And they're like, what they can feel, what they can touch, what they know. And they're like, we have no idea what you guys did. You just went from point A to point, you know, 12, and we're lost. And so when I used to speak, I'd realize the people with me, they were like, yeah, man, that's right on. And the other half part of the room, I lost them. They had no clue. So what I learned to do is going, just because I got it, like to your point, I was like, all right, I need to go back and affirm the other people who are the big picture, you know, entrepreneur intuitives. Did they follow? And most of them do. And then the other group, I'm like, all right, let me explain step one and how. Here was the second step, and that's how Florida came in. And then the third step, I'm like, oh, okay. And that's how we make them feel comfortable in the process.
Right.
And those are those goals along the way.
Right.
Because, you know, just ideas without action, which I've seen a million ideas in my 25 years of business, is, well, they're ideas.
They're nothing more than an idea.
I mean, you know, and you know, that, right. I mean, ideas don't make you money. They have to become tangible action plans, and that's why I believe in bringing diverse talents and people to a team, because some people, which I hate doing, I like the big picture, but they're like, I love putting all the steps together. I'm like, great,
yeah,
you're my guy, you're my girl, you know.
That, and it's so important to identify that when you're team building,
yes,
because a lot of people, like myself, like I work in the movie business, I work in development, right? So I like the beginning, packaging it up, getting all the talent, getting everything going, but the day-to-day grind,
yeah,
it's not me.
No.
I'm going to be your guy that's going to package everything up and give you a framework, and then I would want to hire them.
On to the next.
Yeah, I'm on to the next thing.
That's
like
what
I'm.
That's how I am.
Yeah. So that's where I operate the best. And then, you know, I talk about balconies and basements in our company, right? Like, what's your balcony? Like,
right,
what keeps you going and keeps you excited? And what's your basement? What do you hate operating in? And as CEO, it's our job to actually put those people in where they operate the best, because it's less struggle for them.
Yep.
And less struggle equals a stronger company, right?
It does, you know, and you know, you take a book like years ago, I took some people through Good to Great, you know, and you know, people obviously get the right people in the right seats on the bus, but a lot of times you need to get people off the bus, you need to get the right people on the bus, and you got to realize, and I finally realized it, you know, in mid-career is, you know, these things, like to your point, I do like the big picture and what's the next thing, and I have, you know, had a, you know, a speech the other day, and then, you know, the radio show, and then a switch gears. I thrive on that.
Yeah.
But for other people, it's overwhelming, and it drives them crazy. They want to say, hey, Chris, you know, man, you've got the big picture and you've got the talent. Let me grind out detail after detail. And what I realize is both of those are equally important. You know, it's just where they fit the best, because that's, like you said, that's where their balcony or their basement is, and that's where they're going to be happy, and that's where they're going to produce, and that's what's going to make the organization successful.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about like a topic that a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of people that are in is sales, right? It's the
right
sales thing. So what are some off the top, like, what are some sales strategies that you would recommend, or some, maybe some things that you've implemented in the past?
Well, you know, the first book I wrote was called Everyone's in Sales. And so when I came out with the book, people were like, everyone's in sales. I'm like, let me reframe that. Salespeople, unfortunately, get a bad rap, and there's some bad used car sales type people out there. I said, this book is really written to people not in traditional sales. And, you know, this is written to an IT person or accountant or an engineer going, well, I'm not in sales. Like, well, do you communicate with people? Do you, when you're passionate about your project getting produced, do you, Well, if you define sales that way, I'm like, I do. So people then say, well, you can't sell the other hard-pressed other way. I'm like, you can. I don't, but you can. I find it annoying. So the first thing is, I think you've got to think long-term. You've got to leave it all in the field. Make sure you've looked at every angle possibly to help somebody. You've got to realize it's a small world, and I've already seen in my career two or three times people redevelop themselves and come back at a different time, and how you've treated them makes a difference. And if you try to go for the kill and force something to occur that's not ready to occur, it will bite you. It will come back to haunt you. Right. And you want what's best for them, even if it's, you know, not the right time, even if you wish you could have it. And when you do that and you genuinely, people can see it, sales at its best occurs.
Right. You know, and it's to that point, I love the title of your book, by the way, because to that point, I'm a firm believer that anybody can sell, because if we go, all of us go back to when we're children.
Right.
And you want a lollipop.
Yeah.
You're going to sell your parents which way
right.
to get what you want. Right. I think what happens in life and in school system, life, whatever, friends, family, mom, dad, right? You're used to being told no so many times that those things get suppressed.
Yeah.
And I think when you realize that is a mental game, right? That you do have the ability to convince somebody and you step out, I think you can become a better sales rep, a better version of yourself, no matter where you are.
Yeah, well, you got me in the studio today, man, and I had to fight all that. I mean, yeah. People call me all the time, so, you know, that's kudos to you guys. But, and then I'll return the favor and sell you about coming on something I'm going to do. But you know, seriously, it's very true. And you know, we talked about kids or why, and asking questions. And sometimes, as we get older, we just, some people say, well, you know, it's not going to pay off. It's not going to work. I'm not good in this. And people quickly say, I'm not good in sales. It's not my thing. And I do think there's a natural propensity towards it. Mm-hmm. Also think that people ask good questions and listen and build rapport. They don't have to be the life of the party. Sometimes people just want to be heard, listen, and solve their pain, solve their convenience. I mean, let's just face it. Here in 2019, what I would tell salespeople, are you solving headaches? Are you letting them sleep better at night? Are you providing convenience? Are you providing stress relief? We're living in a slammed, buried, running ragged, slammed, coming up from, you know, for air world. And so the person you're selling to feels the same way we do, Chris. Right. And so if we're not going right after those basic needs, forget what you're selling. Then we're not even realizing they're human beings.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's lost a lot of times.
It's solving an issue.
Right.
Like if you're going in there thinking about your pocket, you're not a good sales rep, right?
No.
You gotta realize that whatever product it is, right? So like I have like tech guys, you know, trying to say, how do I sell tech? You don't sell tech.
No.
You sell solutions. And that's how you can solve. And when people can see that you're solving their issue with your solution, people buy, as long as you're genuine, honest, and you build that relationship.
Yeah, so my second book was called Would You Buy From You? Your Brand Makes a Difference. So it kind of built upon the first concept. And at the end of the book, I concluded, so I won't give a complete spoiler alert, but it doesn't matter. I said, you know, at the end of it is our humanity. It's saying, I said, everyone wants to develop a pact, our passion, our authenticity, our creative approach to it, and we want a relationship built on trust. Mm. And meaning that if this deal or this sale doesn't happen, you know what? It may well work out in 3 months. Mm-hmm. But don't force it. Don't be that guy. And I always say, if you don't know who that guy is, you are that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right.
And so some people lose sight of it. And just, I had one the other day, was driving me crazy for a favor I was doing for them. And finally, I'm like, chill out, man. And you know, if that's that energy, people can feel it.
Right.
You know, that it's either too pushy or genuine.
Right.
Right? So but a lot of people say, yeah, okay, we hear what you're saying. We're going to do it this way. That's their choice, mm-hmm. but not the way I choose to do it,
or
you choose to do it.
Yeah, it's more, I think it's more natural. Like when I always say this, you know, people ask me, well, what are you selling? I said, listen, I've never sold anything in my life. All I've done is make a couple of recommendations and people bought.
I concur. I mean, the people will say whatever, you know, a book or a magazine or this, what are you selling? I'm like, I'm not, or you know, who are you competing with? I'm like,
right.
I don't really care what anybody else does.
Right.
I mean, doesn't mean I don't have respect for them, but I'm on my own journey. Doesn't mean I'm not learning, but if you're looking behind you or out of the rearview mirrors, you can't be focused on what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And we always got to be learning. But yeah, I mean, you know, even I used to own a printing company and back in the day, or it was a senior vice president of sales and marketing of that. And, you know, you would make magazines or catalogs and people, what are you selling? I'm like, I'm going to sell trust because they can't tell how this is going to manufacture. but aren't you selling something on paper? I'm like, that's the byproduct of this transaction. They're trusting me that I'm going to deliver, and they're not going to, you know, have headache relief and scared to death at night that something's going to go wrong.
Right.
Right. That's what I'm selling. I'm not selling a widget.
Right. And we say it all the time, you know, with salespeople, if you're in a sales role, they're buying you.
Yeah, they're buying you. So would you buy from you? I ultimately close the book. Like, your competition is yourself.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you're going to sell differently than I, even if we have the same philosophy. So it means quit worrying what everyone else does. Be who you are. Be real. When you make a mistake, which we all do, own up to it. And when you do those things, people still buy from people. And behind all these social media things that we all use, there's a person.
Yep.
And we forget that.
Yep. So that's really an interesting segue, because, you know, the market has really changed where, like, we'll talk about, like, personal branding, right, for instance, or you know, branding yourself, you know, where a lot of these CEOs and you know, some of these founders, like, back in the day, hiding behind a logo was fine, whatever. Sure. I mean, your Swish logo, the color scheming of your, you know, whatever it is, right? But now we're social media society. So how do you feel the impact of personal branding is on a CEO or a founder to actually, you know, to grow their business? How do you feel about...
You know, I mean, there's no hiding anymore. There's no, you know, we're going to send out a press release and that's be sufficient, or, you know, get back to people in 3 weeks when an incident occurs. It's going to be on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and everything else in the world. So we live in an instantaneous society, and a CEO cannot divorce themselves from being actively engaged. And so what organizations do incorrectly in the branding process, or when crisis is developed, is they don't do anything. They just sit there, and it gets worse and worse. And instead of come out and say, we've made a mistake, we're wrong, we stand behind it, make a statement, because, you know, I would think America in particular is pretty forgiving. If you look at people that have failed, they if they come out and say, I was wrong, I need to fix this. But it's the people that continue behind branding not to say anything, or they keep changing what their opinion is. People can see through that, and they lack the trust. So, yeah, I think people that that are at the highest level of an organization, they can't just say, well, you know, the company believes this, but here's what I believe. Unfortunately, your brand is, you know, what's always say, it's not what you say it is, it's what they say it is.
Right.
And perception is reality in branding. And so in the eye of the beholder, you may say, well, we do this, and people do this because our great customer service. And if I go do an interview for a company, they may say, yeah, I mean, their customer service is pretty good, but really, they're literally the most inexpensive, and that's why we go there.
Right.
And people sometimes don't even know what their brand is.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's yeah. And from a corporate level, you need to know your brand. But most importantly, from a personal level, you know, it's people say that social media is changing people. Social media is not changing people. It's exposing people.
Absolutely.
It's exposing for who you really are.
Yep.
And when, you know, and granted, some of these CEOs, like, didn't grow up with social media. Some of the older CEOs, they didn't grow up with social media, so they may not understand it as much. But it's no different than if you're going to a networking event, right? Mm-hmm. Back in the day, you go to all these network events, you're shaking a whole bunch of hands, but how many people can you actually meet there, right? With you leverage that on social media, specifically, like, even LinkedIn, like, if you're in B2B and you're not on LinkedIn, man, you're missing out, because that is a gigantic networking platform.
And people are watching.
So the easiest way for them to get to know who you are is by releasing content, but it's more personable, right?
Yeah, right.
It's they're getting to know you as a person, as opposed to you being behind the scenes with a company logo. If something does happen and you're not, you know, people haven't been following, you know, there's no following, there's no nothing, and then something happens, like, there's the trust factor that gets lost,
sure.
Right? But if you start building a following and people know who you are from the beginning, now you can address these issues instantaneously without, you know, it seeming like you're trying to hide behind a corporate veil.
Yeah,
corporate logo.
People want, you know, less... You know, this corporate stuff, more authenticity, more down to earth. So from the CEO level, you know, there's no excuse. I mean, you know, I'm mid-career. There's no excuse, and I hear it from a lot of my friends who own companies, social media isn't my thing. You don't have to be an expert in it. You
right.
better understand it.
Yes.
And they don't even understand when, you know, people are tagging them in LinkedIn or on Twitter or Instagram. I mean, I took upon myself a couple years ago to say Instagram was really starting to boom, and people are like, Instagram, I'm like, yeah. And same thing where Twitter was 10 years ago. So you speak of LinkedIn. I remember getting my first LinkedIn request, I think in late 2006. So when my daughter, who's at Georgia Tech, started doing that, she goes, you have so many connections. I'm like, well, I've been on it. But I saw it before it even developed. And when Twitter back then, you know, it's plateaued a little bit, but it opened so many doors for books, for people to connect, people yes. I couldn't connect with otherwise. Yep. So still to this day, when 2019, 2020, when I see people going, yeah, you know, I just don't get it. I'm like, you don't get it, dude. I don't even have an answer for you. It is, everything happens in real time.
Right.
And our responses, whether we like it or not, we can't just sit back and go, well, you know, I wish it was this. Well, you know, everybody does want this, Chris, like we're
yep.
doing now.
Yep.
But you also have to be cognizant of that, and you constantly have to be guiding your company to navigate through this noisy world.
Right. And it goes to the classic thing. People do business with who they know
yep.
and who they trust. And when you're on social media and you're releasing content at scale on a consistent basis, people start building that trust with you. This weird thing happens. Like, they start seeing who you are right before you even physically actually met them. So when that time comes, when they do see you at a networking event, they're like, hey, I saw that article that exactly. you wrote, or hey, I listened to your podcast, or I listened to your talk show, or whatever sure. it was, right? It makes it that much easier for them to do business with you as well.
Yeah, they feel like they know you. I mean, I remember I put out, when I was first starting in the consulting with that industry I left, back then, it was about 10 years ago, and I was going to go after and help with sales and marketing consulting for those printing companies that I knew, because I'd done that a lot in my career. Mm. So I created this robotic video. It was an animated video. It looked like a bunch of robotic salespeople. And I mean, it wasn't anything, but it's had like so many views over the years. So I'd see somebody, and that was part of me. I made it. So it was the robots talking, but it was my script. And yeah. you know, yeah, yeah. being from an actor
right.
and all that, you appreciate yeah. it. But people would hire me from that going, this just, I mean, you're spot on. We loved your robot video or something else. Or, hey, that, you know, I'll go to an event. And they're like, that thing you put up. I'm like, what thing? You know, mm-hmm. but you know, if you're putting out things, and I would just add to what you're saying, consistency, mm-hmm. meaning that you're consistent across all the platforms. So the Chris and Ryan we see here is going to be the same as on LinkedIn. It's going to be the same as on Twitter. It's going to be the same if we're out in the street corner tonight, because that's what people look for. They go, well, this guy, wait, on Twitter he tweets about this, mm-hmm. but I met him and he sounded like mm-hmm. people sense that
yeah.
quickly, right?
Yeah, I think. Yes, I think there is a demographic, though. So there's a certain demographic. So for instance, like, your demographic on LinkedIn is going to be a little bit younger. Still be you, but I think when you address certain things, like in your title, in your tags and stuff like that, you're going to be addressing a different market as True. Opposed to LinkedIn, right? So everybody on LinkedIn is in a business mindset.
Oh, yeah.
So the content on LinkedIn needs to be geared a little bit more towards
certainly,
that market.
Certainly, absolutely.
So whereas, you know, on say Instagram, it's quick video, yeah. stuff like that, micro content. So I think anybody that does step into the personal branding, like trying to make their content work better, just understand the platform of who's actually consuming that type of content, what type of market that is.
Yeah, and I think spot on. In other words, I tell people all the time, you know, okay, you've got a Facebook account, what you're doing over there versus what you're doing on Twitter, Instagram, you can't just post the same thing in
yeah.
every place. So what I was really getting at is, let's say I'm a positive guy who's not gonna be out in the street corner cursing, nor you're gonna see my tweets do that.
Right.
So you're gonna see the same
Ryan. And then a different person. Yeah, you don't wanna see a different person. That's a problem.
Of person.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if I'm you know, Twitter might be fine. We send out 3 tweets a day.
Yep.
No one wants to see 3 Facebook posts a day. And or, you know, everybody has, you know, each one of them exactly has its own specific ingredient. But what I look for is the person I met in person, why do they tweet completely different than when I met them in person?
Right.
The
right.
tone's different.
Right.
But if they're consistent, people go, man, I love that person. Because they start watching. You watch what you write, watch what your videos, watch what you say. And yeah, you got a lot of people from afar. It's amazing sometimes they're watching, and I mean, even the 2 magazines I own, people yeah. read my columns every month. I think they read them more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we just love what you wrote. I'm like, wrote about what?
Yeah, you know? Right.
And, you know, and I'll even see a neighbor sometimes, like, it really inspired me. I'm like, context.
Yeah,
but
yes, right.
it is true. People are watching.
Yeah, I think specifically, because there's a lot of CEOs and there's a lot of founders that want to get into speaking. They've never done it before, right?
Yeah.
It's not a Broadway stage. If you try to act on stage, like, people will sense that. It's literally, you need to just be you.
You do.
And that's it. You're talking, you're having a conversation with the audience.
You
and
are.
I think it's a big fear that a lot of people have, a big struggle that they have. They don't understand it, and they think that they have to perform. And unfortunately, I've seen some speakers, and they feel like they have to perform, and it's like,
you know, you can see through, you know, I was funny. I was speaking to this high school class as a favor yesterday, and this was the youngest group I've ever spoken to. And my challenge wasn't, it was a senior class, half and half, about 400 and 400, about 25 minutes and 25 minutes. So I had a lot of good content, but I also knew with this demographic, keeping them off their phones for about 1 minute was going to be a challenge.
Right.
So a lot of interactivity, a lot of making them, where it wasn't just me spitting stuff at them, I was making my point through. But it was very real, and they started laughing and going, "Oh my God, that's awesome!"
Yeah.
But I kept them off their phones.
Right.
Now it was a challenge of a lifetime.
Right.
But it's doable, and so we want to put generations in the bucket. So that's Gen Z. You know, of course you got millennials, and my generation, Gen X, very small, and then you got the boomers and the generation in front of them, and people are just like, "Oh, all so and so does this." That is absolutely incorrect. I mean, you know, there's tendencies in every generation, but every person's unique.
Right.
Every person's unique.
So what are you seeing in the difference of generations as far as understanding?
I think, you know, you've got boomers, you know, like my parents, you know, well in their 70s and their friends, and, you know, they, you know, it's a huge generation. It's always been a huge generation. And so people are living 70s, 80s, 90s. And you know, I'm seeing these 55-plus communities grow up in every street corner everywhere. And I start to think, you know, I'm not trying to be morbid, but, you know, in 20 years, what are they going to do with all these things? Make them into, you know, fraternity houses or something, you know? And then I see the generation behind it. It's my generation. It's quite small. So quite frankly, it's overlooked, Gen X. And
yep.
Then you get a millennials, mammoth generation. You know, you hear all the time in marketing, millennials, boomers retiring, millennials are there, forget this one, which
right.
is fine, that's an opportunity.
Right.
And then lastly, we now want to lump millennials and Gen Z together. Well, Gen Z is just beginning. I mean, Gen Z is, you know, you're the 16, 17, 18 to 22. So what I would say is, usually every generation does something different than the one in front of them a little bit. And what people that are older do, I see in particular, they say anybody who's on their phone too much, oh, they're a millennial. First of all, no, they're not.
No.
So I told that group yesterday, I said, or whatever day I was speaking to, I said, first of all, let me just tell you something academically. You are not a millennial because you're 17 or 18 years old. But that's just, you know, lack of learning, lack of, if people, and you're the CEO, and there people are on their phone and trying to, you know, look at stuff while you're talking, it probably means you don't have real good engagement with your team because they're not that on board. And if you're engaged and you can look people in the eyes and have an exciting conversation, people don't want to be on their phone. But if they're bored, they're going to go right to it.
Right.
Right?
Right. Interesting.
So, you know.
So, I think it would be important to, if they do are going to their phone and they're millennials, sometimes they could be actually researching what you're talking about. Because I've actually ran into, you know, I've talked to a couple of, you know, other business people that like, yeah, how do I get engagement from my people? I'm like, well, have you actually asked them what they're doing? Because they actually might be researching what you just said. Because, you know, the millennial generation is the generation of information.
It's grown up with the
information.
Internet.
Yeah, grew up with the internet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I find, well, I'm actually on the cusp of a millennial.
Sure.
So like, I do the same thing. So sometimes, you know, when we have sales meetings, I know a lot, and I have a much younger staff. They're all on their laptops, they're all on their phones, but I know that we're all working, we're all, you know, researching that type of stuff. So just, I think, just don't fall into that you know, area where you're like, oh, maybe nobody's paying attention. Just find out what they're doing.
Absolutely, and as I've gotten, you know, every year goes by, you know, you have these people, one's like, we've always done it this way, and they got people this. The best way to lead, I told you I'm working my doctorate in leadership because I want to empower these generations behind me, is to say, you know what? Yeah, John over there is on his phone looking up an answer to what the research says on XYZ. So he may be very engaged in it. So our gut reaction might be, why are you on your phone?
Right.
But John might be a real productive guy that we're calling him out for something. He's actually being productive.
Right.
So I think that's the mistake. I mean, I think it's, oh, you know, everybody's on their phone. Now, should we silence our phones? We're in a meeting. Sure.
Sure.
So everybody cannot be distracted. But you know, phones and social media are part of life.
Yeah.
And it's using tools like a hammer or a screwdriver intelligently. Because as I told this group the other day, I said, your digital connections are absolutely a mammoth.
Mm.
Now, the key is make them into real world relationships.
Right.
Because those will open
yes.
doors. Right?
Yes. So I love that. So using it as a tool to get to the next step, which is actually
connecting
eyeball to eyeball, you know,
because here's what I say, you say in sales, let's go back to that. I say, all right, so Chris, we connected, let's just say we in Twitter, and then we connected on LinkedIn, and then LinkedIn maybe was an inbox message, and then from there said, hey, shoot me an email, and the email's like, hey, I have this, we're connecting to a phone call, the phone call leads to an in-person, bam.
Yep.
And that's what people are like, well, I just sent them a hard message through LinkedIn and I hope that'll sell it. I'm like, no, because you can buy a service. That is not a relationship.
Right.
That is a tool to the relationship.
It's a step.
Process. Exactly.
So in wrapping up, so if there was one solid piece of leadership advice that you could give to somebody, what would that be?
I think two things come to mind. I mean, one is, you know, our time is a present. A time, you know, you can't get time back. You can't. The time we have right now is the present. Time in front of us, it doesn't matter how much money you have. You can't get any more of it. And it's how we structure our days and how we balance our lives. And, you know, I like to just tell people, you know, you should have an appreciation of your past. You should have a dedication of what you're working on in your present. And you should have a strong passion and vision for your future. And when you put those things together and you're real and you invest in other human beings, you know, reciprocity is a big thing, meaning that, you know, hey, this guy reached out and did this for me. People want to help you along as well. And the last thing I'd say in leadership is get people to want to do things because they want to, not because they have to.
Love it. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Ryan. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, guys, thanks for tuning into the episode. If you guys enjoyed it, show some love, give me a thumbs up, and subscribe. Also, make sure you check out our exclusive C-Level group on Facebook.